I would say the thing about Dan that I would want people to remember is just not to give up on the things that you believe are worth fighting for. No matter how hard something looks at any given time, or how insurmountable a task or an objective may seem, Dan kind of had this very endless optimism. He believed that if you fought hard enough, that you could make anything work.
Great companies are all about the people. Good people become great leaders, mentors for work and life.
Welcome to Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. I'm Andrew Tarvin, humor engineer.
And I'm Roman Segal, recovering marketer. Andrew and I both got our start at P&G, the Procter & Gamble company, where we both had the opportunity to work with some amazing people. And as you may know, many leaders across industries got their start at P&G. In this series, through conversations with fellow P&G alums, we hope to go deeper with the leaders you already know but want to know more about, how they got their start, how they make it work, and what keeps them going.
It's kind of like bringing a microphone to a cup of coffee, or in my case, hot chocolate.
On today's show, we're talking about P&G alumni leader Dan Hamilton with Monisha Daybeck, Chief Commercial Officer for Ocean Spray Cranberries. But this is a slightly different series of conversations. Dan Hamilton was a longtime friend and mentor to not just me, but multiple generations of leaders. Sadly, Dan Hamilton passed away suddenly last December of 2022. Since then, many of us have gathered to talk about what Dan meant to us. This is the first of two conversations with friends and colleagues who knew Dan over the years, with Monisha being one of Dan's friends and partners in his most recent professional adventure at Ocean Spray and White Wave. Dan Hamilton was one of my earliest friends and mentors at P&G. Honestly, so much of my own personal style, approach, and knowledge was inspired by him and our many conversations early on in my career. Dan was so much more than experienced marketing, media, and creative leader. Dan was a dreamer, a mentor, and someone who had a passion for coloring outside the lines and breaking all the rules and bringing us along for the ride. Dan fought like hell for what he believed in and those that he cared about. On paper, he was a marketing maverick, but Dan hated anything that was on paper. Dan was a bandmate, a father, and a friend. He was born in Seattle in 1969 to Valerie and Vernon Hamilton. Vernon, known to many as Bud, is actually also a P&G alum who retired after 37 years as a VP in sales, marketing, and governance. Dan once told me that his dad's one of the reasons he came to P&G, which I guess so many of us should thank Bud for. Dan grew up in Cincinnati, later studying journalism and jazz guitar at the University of Cincinnati and CCM. He co-founded the band Spook Floaters, which he toured with, and then he went back to get his master's of computer science from Miami of Ohio, after which he joined P&G as one of the earliest digital marketing managers, starting in the beauty business on Olay. Dan quickly changed the game in digital, rising to become a media leader of Olay, which at the time was arguably the company's most innovative brand in media that the rest of us looked up to. Over nearly 15 years, he got some of the most interesting roles in marketing, working on Olay Global Design, on P&G's corporate brand, and personal care. Dan spent another 7 years in Colorado as a marketing, media, and creative leader at White Wave Foods as it later merged with Danone. In 2021, Dan joined Ocean Spray as the company's head of marketing center of excellence. Across his entire career, Dan was a friend and mentor to so many of us who had the privilege of working with him. And honestly, Dan was always one of the alumni leaders I wanted to reconnect and chat with on this Learnings from Leaders podcast. But we lost touch, more so during the years of the pandemic when we actually started on this show. While one of my many regrets is never getting to see Dan play a Spook Floater show, another one is losing touch with my friend and missing out on all the stories that we could have shared, laughed, and learned from. Suddenly he was gone, passing away on the same day as one of his idols, John Lennon. In the months that followed Dan's passing, I've been thinking about how to capture some of his learnings and stories for all of his many friends and family who he survived by. So let's dive right in. We hope you'll enjoy our conversations about our friend Dan Hamilton. Monisha, welcome to Learnings from Leaders. So Monisha, we've had a few conversations over the last year, but I guess what I'd love to know is, how'd you first meet Dan?
Well, so Dan and I met at a company called White Wave Foods. I had joined in 2011, and he joined about a year or two after that. And I was in sales, Dan was in marketing. And I didn't really meet him until I moved from sales into brand marketing. And I was working on a series of product portfolios, one of them being a new cold brew coffee brand that we were going to launch. So I was on the brand side, and Dan was on our marketing center of excellence. And he was kind of my partner in crime, so to speak, for bringing this new brand creatively to life.
What was your first impression when you first met Dan?
Well, Dan's office was a heck of a first impression. So I can't remember if it was his first office or his second office, but the one I remember, you know, had two couches because, you know, there were a lot of therapy sessions that Dan would conduct for various people on his two couches. And then there were several posters of the Grateful Dead. there was always a bag of mints, like a bowl of mints on his desk. And he had a fridge stocked full of, you know, soy, silk soy creamer and, you know, various nuts that he would eat, cashew nuts and other nuts throughout the day. And so my first impression was that Dan was a very eclectic human between the Grateful Dead, soy creamer, learning that, you know, he was a recently converted vegan and that he was a marketer. So I was coming from a very different set of experiences than Dan. You know, I had just moved from sales into marketing. My background was 9 years of sales. Before that, I was in management consulting. So I came from a very structured way of thinking, and that had served me well up until that point. And Dan naturally came from the most unstructured way of thinking you could possibly imagine. And the two of us, you know, were on this endeavor, on this journey to launch this new brand that nobody else wanted to launch at the time. So we were pushing, so to speak, the proverbial water uphill. And so I don't, it was just very, very unique kind of match between the two of us. You know, we were very different personalities. We used to kid all the time. My color was red through all the personality charts that were tools we would do. And he was the opposite of red. So he was green. So for everything that I was this, he was literally the 180 degree opposite of whatever that was. So we had a blast kind of from day one.
What's one of those early stories at work or otherwise, like when the red and green had to mix?
Oh my goodness, so many. You know, it was interesting, like that brand launch, and we worked on many things together over the years. You know, we worked together for close to a decade at different companies. One of the earliest memories I had of that launch was I quickly realized I just had a ton to learn from a marketing standpoint. I think you mentioned that he was, you know, one of your earliest mentors. He was certainly one of my earliest mentors. You know, everything from how does a production shoot work? How do you get great quality creative out of an agency? How do you secure or win enough trust in that agency for them to kind of let you in, you know, when the creative is still kind of in the fuzzier, less fine-tuned stages so that you can influence appropriately? Just select small snippets of things that I was learning. And so we really like divided and conquered quite a bit. So I knew I was learning so much from him on the marketing side that I was really just trying to be a sponge. I asked a couple of questions here and there along the way to clarify, which, you know, he very politely answered. I'm sure it was a waste of his time, but, you know, he did it. But I was much stronger at the other things, right? Like working with R&D and figuring out how to make sure we could sell the product and manufacture the product. And I think that formed kind of the basis of a lot of our future partnerships over the next decade. Is we knew what each other was really good at, and we gave each other the space to do what they were good at, and trusted, you know, even if we didn't fully understand on a particular thing, why are you making that decision? Like, well, I trust you that it's the right call, right? And so we faced that moment many, many times. We worked together at White Wave for 7 years, and then he came to work for me at Ocean Spray, what was supposed to be for many, many years, of course, and was way too short at 18 months, or actually not even, I think, 14 months.
Mm. One of the things, words you said, is trust. I feel like Dan, when working together with someone, he always wanted to create the space for that trust or create the relationship to have that trust, assuming there was like some credible proof that you knew what you were doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's one of your favorite Dan stories?
Oh my God. You know, I would say, well, to go back to the trust point that you were making, I feel like Dan, more than any other person I've really ever met in my career, he would make the effort to get to know each person as a person.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Dan story is probably not, I mean, I have many, many creative stories that we can go down that path, I'm sure. But my favorite story was how he would interview people. So once I sent him a candidate for a senior marketing role, brand marketing role, I forget the level. I think it was a director or senior director or something for a pretty major brand that I was working on, a plant-based milk brand at the time. And, you know, and this was the leading candidate to get this role. And it was a big job, right? It was, you know, we didn't want to go outside, but we did. And I remember calling him after he interviewed the candidate saying, you know, what'd you think? Like, do you have any feedback? And he was like, well, like he was a good human. I think he'll be fine. And I'm like, well, did you ask him about the job? What do you think he's a good marketer? Do you have any concerns about his creative abilities, about his ability to work with external partners, you know, things I assumed would come up in the interview. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, we didn't get into any of that. But, you know, the one thing I will tell you, Monisha, is that the only strike I really see is he wore a suit. I said, well, if he knew it was an interview, Dan, so of course he wore a suit. He goes, yeah, yeah, no, but like, that's not a good thing. I mean, I only wear suits to funerals, and even that's questionable. So I'm not sure. He's going to need some coaching about the suit thing. So literally the guy, Dan asked this candidate, again, senior marketing role, no questions about actual marketing, but I think he found out about this guy's, you know, childhood history, where he grew up, more about his parents, what he liked to do on the weekend, why was he wearing a suit, did he own other clothes, you know.
Sounds like Dan would be a good podcast host.
Absolutely. And honestly, we ended up hiring that candidate, and he worked out great. And I think it was just that to me was Dan, right? Like, he wanted to get to know people. And at the core, he wanted to know about who you were as a person, what made you tick. He had these five questions he would always ask his team. And, you know, they were like existential life questions, of course.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember any of them?
Oh, I have the list. I have the list. We can totally talk about that. But he wanted to know kind of who you were at your core. And then everything else, in his view, could be taught, right? I mean, you know, he could teach you marketing. He could teach you creative. He would keep some things close and he would let some things, you know, be shared. But that's probably one of my favorite things, because I think that served him so well throughout his career, both in terms of his legacy, right, as well as his ability to kind of deliver amazing creative with agencies and with, internal partners. It was a human sport, and he excelled at the human side of the sport more than any other part.
Yeah.
Certainly was not the math part that he excelled at.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he had the tactics and the know-how, and he could learn the secret formula, and if he knew a secret formula that he was willing to let out, he'd let you in on it.
Right.
But it's the other stuff. It's how he did the work. Like, I think with the group of folks that came up with Dan because of Dan, like, more than anything else, it's not the tactics we learned. It's like how we go about carrying ourselves. And
absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of thing takes a lot of time to be taught. And I would say I'd watched Dan, you know, with many, many people, many marketers and folks in other functions as well over the years. And there are people who would not let him in to teach. Mm-hmm. And there were many, many more people who did. And even the most unassuming or, you know, guarded people, somehow Dan was able to get in. You know, he would always meet someone. And if they had challenges, or not even from a work perspective, just life, he would always say, you know, I can fix you. You know, I will make you better. And I would always just say, I don't know, Dan, I'm not sure you can fix everyone. He's like, well, but I'm going to try. Awesome. So yeah, that was, you know, Dan was like the most human of humans, I would say, to everyone. That's from when people reached out to me after he passed, that's the one common thread. It did not matter what agency you were from, what decade you worked with him, what level you or he was at, were at the time. That's what everybody said. You know, it was like, Dan just got me.
Yeah.
And I think that level of connection that he would build with people was really unmatched.
Well, it was arguably to him and even to me, and, you know, you kind of pick these things up by osmosis, like the most important part of business is like the people.
Yep.
Right. Or the relationships you build along the way. Because we're not going to be working on this one project or this one PowerPoint or this one launch 5 years from now, you know?
Right.
So, but that being said, like, you worked on a lot of cool stuff. You know, after you left Procter, you went off into a more interesting, a more niche, a more, just a much more interesting world than, women's beauty products. And, into something, I didn't realize that he went plant-based. I did not know that about him.
He did.
So what were some of those, like, campaigns or projects or fun things that you got to work on with him?
Oh, so many. So we launched Stoke Cold Brew Coffee together. So that was the cold brew brand. He and I worked on the silk business together, creating new campaigns, working on new products. Because at that point, you know, he had progressed in his career at White Wave, and he was responsible for kind of the agency and creative side of the house, as well as design, packaging design. So we worked on silk packaging design. We worked on silk creative campaign. He worked on several yogurt brands for Danone. Well, by then, White Wave had been purchased by Danone, which is a global French organization. And he worked on the Oikos campaign, you know, Light and Fit. He and I didn't work directly together on those, but by then we were very good friends. And so I knew of his efforts, if you will, to kind of, you know, bring his style of marketing over to the Danone yogurt side of the house.
A really fun aside there. So like after Procter, I was at Danone.
Okay.
And then I left going to startups, right? And
okay.
Dan was still at Procter. And then Dan went to White Wave, and then the acquisition happened. And as the acquisition happened, you know, the two companies weren't allowed to talk to each other, right. So.
Yep.
And I got a message from Dan, and you know, you open a message. There's a few people in the world where when you get a message from, you open it up immediately. Oh my God, I want to hear whatever it is this person has to say. Dan is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally that. It's like, I have so many questions about Danny, and I'm not allowed to talk to them. And you seem to know all of these people. And the way we got in touch, you know, with one of my Danone alum friends, right, who put us in touch a year ago, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just remember the nature of the ask. I could probably go digging through the emails. It's like wanting to know about the people, wanting to know about the values and who are the people I should be talking to. And it's not the political side. It's just like, hey, who are the fellow humans here?
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
who are the first people I should be talking to and getting to know?
Right.
And I thought that was just, that was the priority more than anything else.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's exactly what he did. So, you know, those were all the brands we worked on. And then in around 2021, you know, I got the opportunity to come over to Ocean Spray and came over and I did a reorganization based on where, you know, our leadership wanted to evolve the commercial organization. And there was a great role for Dan, you know, on my team. And we really were intending and starting to kind of build, you know, the thing we kind of both loved, you know, and the really cool part was, he was at this point in his career where he had nothing left to prove to himself. And, you know, we had worked together for so long in so many different aspects that we knew each other really well. We had a very high level of trust. We knew what we were trying to build here. And he was just having fun, you know, like he was really enjoying the work. I think he was at a really peaceful point in his life. Professionally, mm-hmm. personally as well. So yeah, that's what makes it very bittersweet at the end. I think he, you know, really was kind of at the peak of his career.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, when you work with someone for so many years on so many projects over so many eras of a career, right? Mm-hmm. You get to know them. You get to learn a lot more about them outside of work.
Absolutely.
Is there, and it's so crazy when we were talking a year ago, you know, when I worked with Dan, his kids were much younger. When I worked with Dan, you know, what he was doing with his band was much different before he moved to Colorado, right? What are some of those personal things or personal stories outside of work that you remember about Dan or Dan telling you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so many. I mean, you know, so he was a vegan. He was also a Buddhist. He viewed his life as like this evolution. You know, obviously he'd mm-hmm. had some really tough times in his life. He struggled through a lot of demons earlier, you know, during his PNG days in his life. And I think it made him kind of grateful for life in a weird way, because, you know, he would often tell me many times, Monisha, I should have been dead like decades ago. You know, this is really like my ninth life here.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really lived his life. You know, he was a simple person at heart in his life. He would say, and I've learned more and more about this, you know, since his passing from much of his family. His brother, Jeff, who works at Nestle, you know, his partner, Sam, his parents, he strove each year to need less, just consume less, have less of a footprint on the earth than the year before. So I think being vegan was part of that, right? How much you consume from the land.
Mm-hmm.
He was not a wardrobe person, per se. I mean, I think the man had every Converse known to man. But other than that, he kind of wore the same thing every day, right? It did not matter whom he was speaking with. He's presented to board meetings. Yeah. He would present to senior leadership and he'd have, you know, more casual conversations. And he was always kind of jeans and the hoodie, right? Which was Dan's thing. Yeah. The hoodie would just have the logo of the appropriate company that he worked for at the time.
Interchangeable, right?
Interchangeable logos, yes. So yeah, he just strived to kind of live a very simple life. I think he was really driven by the creative side of work, right? And art. His music, he was very passionate about his music, would travel back to Cincinnati often to play gigs with his band. His friends and family, you know, and he had a wide, wide network of friends and family. And then, of course, those closest to him, his kids, carved out a lot of time to spend with his children, you know, doing the things that mattered most to them. I remember one funny story. His son, Leo, at one point in time in the last few years, Leo decided to take up hunting as a hobby. And I remember saying to Dan, I'm like, so you're vegan and you're going to go hunting with your son? Like, how does that work? And he said, well, you know, Monisha, very factually, of course, you know, I shoot to miss quite a bit. And, you know, he's like, both of us, I would say, are not very good hunters. And we're not striving to become very good hunters, but it's about spending time in the woods with my son and hanging out and getting to know each other. And, you know, and he was willing to go hunting, right? Even though it kind of went against some of his beliefs to do that. So he would, you know, take his son out for baseball practice, drive them places, spend time, you know, with his daughters. His oldest daughter had a passion of pursuing a creative career. She was finishing up college and going to live in New York City. So he was working with her on that. So yes, I would say outside of his work life, I mean, he had this very common saying that many of us at Ocean Spray and probably at Danone have adopted of just like, it's all bullshit. You know, it really is all bullshit. So if there's a given meeting or there's a big presentation or a deadline, all the stresses of whatever job you're in that seem so big at the time, you know, he just took so much of that in stride.
Yeah.
And the only time I'd ever seen him truly stressed, if it was something about his music or some, which was practically never, something about creative, if it wasn't going the way he wanted it to go, or something with his friends and family. You know, if something was bothering you, that was when he would become more concerned.
Let's talk about his music. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in this band, Spook Floaters, mm-hmm. before his professional career. And then he stayed in touch and kept it going. I mean, all the way until not being in Cincinnati, even though the band wasn't Cincinnati. You know, and for us, I remember when we were all younger, I think we discovered the Facebook page. And then over time, you know, we found out about it. But like, talk about the role of music in Dan's life.
Yeah.
Beyond the Grateful Dead posters in his office.
I mean, it was so integral. You know, I think he was just a music lover at heart. You know, that band, the Spook Floaters, that was, he joined that band, I think, in high school.
Yeah.
Or at least some of the folks in it he had known since high school. And so really, you know, over the course of 40 years, he was with this band. It was one of the constants in his life. And I'd actually, ironically, never seen him play or heard him play. And after his passing, you know, a couple of friends and family members shared some clips of his music with me. And of course, the Spook Floaters page, Facebook page, has some clips of him playing as well. And he was just a very gifted musician. You know, it was interesting at his funeral, his brother, of course, gave some remarks. And Jeff was talking, Jeff's his brother, he was talking about when they were kids. And Jeff and Dan could not be more different from each other. Jeff is much more the structured brand marketer I was talking about before, and Dan was definitively not that. But one of the things that Jeff mentioned in his remarks was Dan was kind of like a child prodigy of music or with music. You know, he learned different instruments very quickly. He picked up on different different types of music. So it's not that there was just one kind. And I just think for him, it was an artistic and, you know, structured way of thinking for him to kind of learn new things and be in that space. So he played multiple instruments, you know, be it the guitar and different types of guitars, of course. But I also think he played multiple other instruments. At Ocean Spray, when we launched a new campaign together here at Ocean Spray, What Will You Do With All That Power in 2022? And Dan was very close with our creative agency, who's still our agency, and working through the various, you know, iterations of the campaign. And at one point, we needed to pivot from more animation, from a creative perspective, into live action. And we were on a very tight timeline to get a new spot out the door. And we needed a music track for the spot. And, you know, Dan, of course, had great trust with our agency, Orchard. And so he played the track, he offered to play the track himself, right? Rather than go out and hire a talent from a music standpoint. So Mm-hmm. I think music was really just such a core part of his life.
Yeah. You know, he played like a couple of like in-house corporate gigs just to play for the sake of playing and bringing his gear to work. But I remember, and this is well after, I think we were probably both out of Proctor. We were talking about something and he said in a statement, my partner and I, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, partner, but he was referring to his creative partner, one of his bandmates. Mm. I realized the conversation was about music, and it's something that I personally take into heart with the different like creators that I get to work with, and I'm beyond work, right? Be it podcasting partners, writing partners, etc. But he took creative partnership really, really, really seriously. Like
he did
your partner versus your bandmate,
yep,
or your co-writer or your co-author is. It kind of played that level of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs with him.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I learned from him creatively, you know, outside of the people and the relationship side is he would never, he had very high standards for creative and they were his own standards that had been kind of built and shaped over a career, you know, with Procter & Gamble training, with other companies, other experiences. And so my favorite times are what we're watching him kind of fight for the creative that he believed needed to get into the world. Mm-hmm. Because I either didn't test well or, you know, there was some pushback from senior leadership across companies, not just at White Wave or Ocean Spray, but multiple points in his career, you know, whether legal wouldn't permit him to say something. And I mean, he would argue, and this was even at Ocean Spray, you know, for hours at length with various levels of the legal department of, you know, just words, right? Words in a script, or because he felt they were changing the meaning, they were sub-optimizing the creative. And that was, you know, sacrosanct to him. So just that element of you need to be a little bit brave and you need to fight for the things that you believe in creatively. Otherwise, you're just making stuff that is in line with the masses and what people expect, instead of doing the unexpected, which is what needs to be done versus what people expect to push forward creatively.
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorite learnings from him.
Yeah. It's this idea of expression matters. What you say matter. It's the juxtaposition against, you know, it's all bullshit. It's just a job. But something I, in the world of marketing, and I can specifically speak to like startup marketing, it's really easy to put a lot of garbage out there right now. It's just easier than ever. Technology has made it easier. But like, do you stand behind your work or not? Right. And like, is this something you're proud of? It's not the most important thing. The most important thing is the book I'm writing, or, you know, taking my daughter out taekwondo or whatever. But like in the moment, if you're going to do something, do it well. Right. If you're going to express something, don't make it be part of bullshit. So
yes, absolutely. You know, one of the quotes he said to our, who's now leading our agency for design, Andy Yates, really good friend of Dan's. You know, Andy shared this quote that Dan had always shared with him, you know, just because people like bad shit doesn't mean you should keep making bad shit, you know, and just going to the world of social media, right? Where regardless of the size of the brand you are, you must compete there on all the various platforms. And, you know, that is kind of the definition of what's liked by the masses, right? And you can easily fall into that trap of making things that the masses like, or making the right things that make sense for what you need to do from a brand standpoint. So yeah, that was one of the unique gifts I think he had. And he would sell some things creatively that were, you know, you would raise one eyebrow often and say, really? Like, that's the hill you're going to die on, that thing? And he would, absolutely. I'd watched him, you know, sell in a script playing guitar on his own for a yogurt campaign that he was trying to pitch internally. You know, he would often do the readings and things like that nature himself. It was always kind of a joy to watch because he was just such a gifted marketer from a creative standpoint. We started working on a case study with Boston College at Ocean Spray. And, you know, this was the first year he was with us, and or the first several months, I think he was only at Ocean Spray for maybe 4 or 5 months when this opportunity presented itself. And he was slammed. He was doing a reorganization of his team. We were trying to get a campaign out the door. We were working on new packaging design. And this request came and I said, Dan, there's no way you have time to do this. And he goes, no, it's fine. I'll figure it out. And he just wanted to teach people, you know, and this is a program at Boston College. And, you know, it was an opportunity to teach marketing in a different way and learn from another generation, because he was always learning from people he met.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he would love this podcast. If there's a way for kind of his legacy of teaching and learning to live on beyond his time on Earth, I think he would be the happiest person alive, so to speak.
Did that work end up happening with Boston College?
Yeah, yeah. We've done, he actually passed right. That was the last meeting that he had at Ocean Spray, like the last big meeting. It was on a Thursday. He was flying back from Toronto from a shoot we were doing. And he took a 5-hour call, a video call, basically from, I think, the Toronto airport, because it was the initial presentation to Boston College to kick off the second year of the case study. And it was about, you know, how to build brands, right? And it wasn't even teaching, like, it was setting up the challenge from a brand building perspective that Ocean Spray was facing and asking the students to come up with ideas on how to help Ocean Spray build our brand for kind of the next 100 years. And so this coming fall, we are continuing to talk to Boston College. And, you know, again, he did this presentation to the school. The students were supposed to read out their ideas the following week, and that's the week he passed away. She said, you know, do you want to do it again? Because obviously it's, you know, sensitive for what he was working on, one of the last things when he passed. And the team at Ocean Spray, they jumped at the opportunity to do it again. You know, absolutely, we need to keep this legacy going. How do we think about setting up something in Dan's name, you know, in terms of not an award, but almost like what would be the thing that a student would have to exhibit
to do, right, exactly,
for it to qualify for like the Dan Hamilton School of Teaching Marketing, right?
Yeah.
And our agency, Orchard, you know, they've created kind of the Dan Hamilton Bravery Award, right? For a creative that champions the bravery of an idea, despite, you know, all evidence pointing to the contrary.
I love that.
We are at Ocean Spray are creating kind of a Dan Hamilton, you know, Break the Rules Award. We'll figure out our name. But so I think there's various ways people are trying to remember him.
Yeah.
And remember the things that he taught.
Is there anything else like random or funny or silly, like fun facts about Dan that people might not have known?
Oh, fun facts about Dan. So you want to hear the 5 questions?
Oh my God. Yeah. So Dan had these 5 questions he'd ask in general to folks in team meetings, et cetera.
Yes. Okay. And so one of Dan's great gifts from a at work perspective was really how he built what we would call like a work family. You know, he would keep in touch, right? I mean, you know, you would lose touch with people over time, but he would always keep in touch with so many people, and he was known for building his work families. And the way he did it is to get information out of you that you would normally never reveal at work. You know, there's like yourself at work and yourself in life. And sometimes some people have this philosophy of like the two shall never meet, two worlds never collide. And so Dan's 5 questions were the quintessential way to get information out of you so that you get to know each other on a human level. So question 1 was, if you won the lottery tonight, you know, the big lottery, not just a couple hundred million, but like the $1 billion lottery, would you keep doing this job? And if not, what would you do? So that was question 1. Question 2, if you could possess a talent that you weren't born with, what would it be and why? Question 3, what is the one accomplishment in your life that you are most proud of? Question 4, if you could have a superpower, what would it be and why? And Dan's favorite question, and he wouldn't ask all of these questions at one time. You know, he would ask one in a team meeting, another like 4 or 5 months later, and he would build to this 5th question because it was, you know, the big one. The 5th one was, what's the closest you've come to dying? And what effect did it have on you? So you could just imagine, you know, Dan's, you know, for us, right, Dan was new to Ocean Spray. He and I had known each other for many years, but he was new to the company. And, you know, Ocean Spray is a pretty traditional company. We've been around, we're a grower-owned cooperative. We've been around for over 90 years, and they've never had a Dan Hamilton work here, and they probably never will again. And so having someone show up and ask these questions, you know, the HR department, which was one of Dan's favorite functions, it was just a joy to like watch him kind of build a team again. And he was beloved by his team and many others, you know, at the company. And in a very short time. So he would ask these types of questions to really kind of get at the heart of who you were as a human and what mattered to you.
Yeah.
And none of the questions had anything to do with your job.
I mean, to go off on a bit of a tangent, for any of these, call it questions, did you ever hear Dan answer them himself? Do you know any of Dan's answers to these things?
That's a great question. You know, yeah, some of these, absolutely. So if you, the winning the lottery comment, would you keep doing this job? I think Dan would. I think creative was just such an innate part. And he worked so hard over his career to build the type of marketing job he wanted to do and was good at. Yeah. You know, he wasn't kind of, you know, responsible for a P&L.
Not playing the upper out game.
No, not at all. It, kind of, he shaped his career from, a you know, becoming a digital expert to getting to work with no agencies really well. Like he was doing his dream job. So I don't know that he would stop. And he never...
Well, he was making it along the way.
Absolutely. And so he wouldn't... And he wasn't ever in it for the money, right? So even if he won the lottery, one, I think he'd give all the money away because, you know, money management was not a strength of his, but he had some strengths and then there were other not strengths.
Low-cost ETFs, Dan.
Yeah,
come on.
Right. So that was one of the questions. I think the accomplishment in life that he was most proud of, I think he would say his kids.
Yeah.
I think, or it could be his band. You know, that would be a good question to ask others.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the closest he came to dying, you know, he overcame a pretty serious addiction in his life. And he also survived a pretty serious car accident early in life when he was a teenager. And so he came close to dying, I'd say at least twice that I know of. And I think for him, the effect was just he spent even more time living.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quality living.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the most important thing you learned from your friend Dan?
I think the most important thing is that people matter. No matter the job, no matter the level, right? You got to make sure that you know your people around you and you surround yourself with kind of people that matter to you and that you learn about what matters to them.
Yeah. And last question, one thing you want people to remember about Pal Dan?
It's hard to pick one thing.
What's something? Yeah.
Something. Yeah. I would say the thing about Dan that I would want people to remember is just not to give up on the things that you believe are worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think no matter how hard something looks at any given time, or how insurmountable a task, you know, or an objective may seem, Dan kind of had this very endless optimism. Even at times where you'd say, Dan, this literally is never going to we just need to give this up. He'd say, no, we're going to find a way. We're going to find a way. It's going to work out. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. So he just was very, just an endless optimist. He believed that if you fought hard enough that you could make anything work. So not to give up, you know, preemptively.
Well, Manisha, thank you so much for sharing. I heard a few things that rang true about the early years of my friend Dan, but it's so clear to see how they evolved into such a wonderful friendship.
No, thank you for doing it.
And that's our show. Like what you heard? Please subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform. For show notes about this episode, links to things mentioned, or requests for sponsorship, visit pgalums.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at pgalumpod. We'd love to hear from you.
Learnings from Leaders is a production of the P&G Alumni Network, a global nonprofit founded by former P&Gers committed to community, enrichment, and philanthropy. With more than 45,000 registered members worldwide, the network connects alums through global conferences, local chapters, industry events, and online content. Our nonprofit foundation supports economic empowerment communities around the world. To find out more, visit pgalums.com.
That's it for this week. I've been Roman Segal.
And I'm still Andrew Tarvin. Thanks for joining Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. We'll see you next time.